Welcome back, everyone. It is that time again. It is time for Chat with a Cat. It's been a while. I've had some personal stuff going on, but we're going to try and get back into it. This is Chat with a Cat, episode number 29. This is being recorded following the 1985-86, which is season six season all-star break, so we're right ahead of the trade deadline, although we've had a number of trades go through. I decided I wanted to do a slightly different format for this sense of Chat with a Cat, because I've been off for most of the season. Part of this is due to some family issues. For those that weren't aware, I had to do some emergency caretaking of my aging mother right before she passed away. So I've been dealing with that and all the fun fallout that comes from that. But things are clearing up a little bit in terms of time commitments. Obviously, she needs a lot less care now. So I can kind of get back, hopefully, into the cadence of doing some chats with a cat. And last season was the season of guest hosts. I'm hoping to get back into the groove of that. But I figured what I would do for this round of Chats with a Cat, because I haven't been able to react and comment as the season goes along, is I thought it might be fun to do a little bit of a deeper dive and try to spend, let's say 5 to 10 minutes per team, probably going to be closer to five, going over the state of the teams. My goal on this pod is to get through the Atlantic Division. If I do that, it'll be kind of a shorter Chat with a Cat. I know usually we go 45 minutes to an hour, but you know, if I put in some half hour sessions, hopefully that will help ease me back into it. So with that said, I'm going to start by taking a look at the Bullets. I think I have mentioned before that the frustration I always have with the Bullets is these are the guys that seem to like the same players I like. If I lose a free agent bidding war, it's usually to the Bullets or the Warriors. And that happened again to me in the draft. I was working to see if I could get the number 12 pick. I didn't think I wanted to pay the price there. I figured Gerald Wilkins would go number 12. I could go negotiate for 13 and pick up AC Green, who I was after. So I got everything finalized for the 13th pick, and when I went to post it up, I noted that there was a trade between the Jazz and the Bullets, and that the Bullets had picked AC Green. I didn't want to back out of the trade because that would kind of suck. So I went ahead and did the trade anyway. And fortunately, John Konkak turned out to be a little better than I hoped. But the Bullets, jumped ahead and grabbed somebody I was looking at. So you can probably guess, especially since we met in the finals last season, I have an immense amount of respect for the way Mike Lowry is building his team. I think what he has done this season is a little bit interesting, and I'll get into why. So the core of the Bullets for the last several years has been the Larry Nance, Buck Williams combo at the bigs. And these guys are now coming into their prime. Larry Nance is 27. Buck Williams is 25. I think for the most part they've reached their potentials, and if they haven't, their potentials may be over 100. I mean, Buck Williams is at 100 in offensive rebounding. He may have a higher potential than that because, we can't see what's under the hood, but it's never going to go above 100. So for all intents and purposes, I would say these guys are more or less fully grown, and they are doing a great job being a pair of terrors inside in this era of Twin Towers. Nance this season is averaging 30 points, 8.7 rebounds. Buck is averaging 23 points, 9.5 rebounds. So between your two starting big men, you're looking at an average of 53 points and 16, 17, 18, just over 18 rebounds. So that's the good for the Bucks. They have their their big men locked in. I think the question marks around the Bucks this season revolve more around their wings and their point guards. They've been running John Lucas as the starter, and Lucas is 32. He's starting to get a little long in the tooth. He's starting to decline a little bit. He's never been a big scorer, but this season, my big concern, if I were sitting in Lowry's shoes, is his assists have taken a significant dip this year. He's gone from averaging double digits to just 7.8, and the minutes haven't really fallen off. But the turnovers have gone up, the assists have gone down, the personal fouls have gone up, and so one wonders how long can they continue to run with John Lucas at point guard. And to his credit, and you know, again, I was not thrilled to see this, but in the offseason, he pulled the trigger on picking up Sleepy Floyd. The good news, such as it is for the rest of the league, is he hasn't really been utilizing Floyd. Floyd's only started 8 games and he's only averaging 18 minutes. But Floyd, we know, has great potentials in handles and passing. He's probably not there yet, which is, I think, why Lucas is still the starter. But it would not surprise me to see him move into the starting lineup next season. The other thing to be aware of with Sleepy is that he is coming up for his first free agent contract. And I think the big tell here, and I'll get to this in a minute, as to whether or not Sleepy is going to get the max from the Bucks. I think he would anyway, but I think it will be very obvious if John Lucas's team option gets declined, which I think the Bullets would be wise to do. I think Sleepy Floyd is probably going to command close to a max, and I don't think they can afford to pay both Floyd and Lucas the max. So I think Lucas's team option gets declined, and this is the season they're prepared to move off of John Lucas and move over to Sleepy Floyd. So they've already got their backup in place, which is great team building and great planning. The place, I don't know that I would say concerned, but I don't have as good a read on. I understand what they're doing with Michael Cooper. They picked him up as well. Now, Coop, he was picked up this season on 12-15. He's got... I think we all know what Cooper is at this point, right? He's not a great offensive powerhouse. He's only averaging 10 points a game this season, which is fine, because you don't get Michael Cooper for his offense. You get him for his defense. And I suspected when I saw the move that was what the Bullets thought was their missing ingredient last season. And I think they're probably right. If you take a look at their team field goal percentage allowed, they're second in the league behind only the shot block happy Bucks. And so, at least to my mind, the Bullets have now gone out and gotten what they wanted, which was increasing their perimeter defense. I don't know that they could have done much to increase their post defense without giving up the offense that Nance and Buck Williams give them. The thing that has intrigued me about watching the Bullets this season, though, is their search for their fifth starter. You know, obviously, Nance and Williams are locks. If you're not going to play Floyd at point guard, Lucas is your starting point guard, and Cooper is one of your, you know, wings as a defensive specialist. And right now he's been playing the shooting guard. But what I have noticed is that the attempts that the Bullets have made with their lineups is to play Buck Williams at small forward. They play Larry Nance at center, and then they've been having a rotating cast of characters at power forward. It's been Blair Rasmussen. It's been Wayne Cooper. And I think for a moment they may have tried playing small with Rory Sparrow and Gerald Henderson, maybe sliding into the shooting guard spot, moving Sleepy up to small forward. I'd have to go back and look more specifically. The thing that I think the Bullets are running into right now is I'm not sure I like the idea of Buck Williams at the small forward, and here's why. Buck is an outstanding post defender with an 84 rating. He's not a great perimeter defender with a 30 rating. And last season, when I matched up against him in the playoffs, and this may be why he got Michael Cooper, what I did to try to take advantage was turn Kelly Trpiuka loose against his bigs by playing him at center, knowing that Trpiuka's a perimeter player, so even though his big men were good defensive big men, they were good against big men. They weren't good against smaller guys. So that was a matchup decision that I made, and I think, you know, you can say it turned out in my favor because we won the title. But what I have seen is, you know, they've made the move. You know, Lucas is he's a B defender. He's got a 70. Obviously, Cooper is a great defender. What I am noticing is the trend, and we've talked about this with teams trying to move guys around and fill the power forward spot, is perimeter defenders with size like Cooper are at a premium. And so if you were to ask me what my recommendation would be for the Bullets, I think it would be to stop trying to move Buck Williams down to small forward, let him go up to power forward, and then move Cooper up to small forward, and then use one of their better defensive guards, and I think it's probably Sleepy Floyd, just because Gerald Henderson and Rory Sparrow are both good defenders, but they don't have size. I think you move Sleepy Floyd to shooting guard and John Lucas to point guard. So where the Bullets are now is they're a team that, you know, does have one hole that they'd like to look to fill, and I think that's a second perimeter two-way player. I think they have the assets to get that if they want to go do it, but it's probably going to require, you know, they're not going to move Sleepy Floyd. They're not going to move Larry Nance. They're not going to move Buck Williams. They've shopped John Lucas and not gotten a bite. So I think at that point, you know, looking at their assets, I think Rory Sparrow and Gerald Henderson are a bit overpaid. So it's going to have to be either Blair Rasmussen or AC Green, guys on rookie contracts that are pieces that I'm sure they want for the future, but they may have to sell the future in order to win in the present. Because they're locked in with their draft picks. They've traded away their 87 first, which means they can't trade away their 86 or 88 due to the step-in rule. And so if you're not going to trade your stars and you've got guys making more money than is easily tradable, you have to look at moving some of your less talented players, and you may have to aggregate them with a contract or two in order to get them to work. And yes, that means you have to give up on your youth movement. And that's always the balance that we walk, right? Do you try to win now and push all your chips in the middle? Or do you try to play the two timelines game and win now and win in the future? And doing that is extremely difficult. It's possible the Bullets could walk that tightrope. I don't think they get by the Bucks in the East this season, but I think they are a team that has consistently traded well and made good solid pickups in free agency. I do think they are probably looking to make one more move. I just don't know if they are ready to part with the assets it will take to get that move, because I know they're very high on Rasmussen and Green. So that's where the Bullets are. I think they have the driver's seat in the Atlantic Division. They are going to be a strong team in the playoffs this year and in the future. Are they a championship caliber team? They came very close last season. I think the Bucks are enough improved that they don't get by them this season. Mostly, though, I think the Bucks are just the overwhelming favorites. But could I see the Bullets getting to the conference finals? I could. I think they're one move away from being on the Bucks level, but they're certainly, you know, they're A tier if the Bucks are S tier. Let's move on to the Knicks and where they're at. Now, the Knicks have almost been trolling the Sonics this season by pointing out that the Sonics don't have their own pick. I'm a little surprised that the Sonics decided to blow things up and reconfigure their team. We'll get to that later on, but what it means is the Knicks are looking at an asset that I think will be very valuable in terms of netting them another star potential player. The thing that I would worry about if I were the Knicks is, again, are you building on two timelines? Right now, the Knicks are built around Moses Malone, who's 30, Bernard King, who's 29, and to a lesser extent, their third and fourth players are Greg Kelcer, who's 28, and Johnny Moore, who's 27. So all of their key players are in their prime. Kind of like the Bullets, they're still looking for that true fifth starter. They've tried a little bit of Jim Spanarkel. They've tried Mark McNamara. They've tried Steve Stepanovich. I imagine they're probably looking for the right matchups in the playoffs, and so they'll do Moore, Kelcer, King, and Malone, and then add the fifth starter as matchups dictate. But then the question becomes, if you are to draft a young player, and we have noted even, you know, unless you have the number one overall pick, which they could get, but they might not, generally it's taken 2 to 3 seasons for players to really grow into themselves. The number one overall pick usually is an all-star. Everybody else, it takes a little while to get there. And so if it takes, let's say, 2 years after the draft for your player to get there, he's now entering his third year. But Moses Malone will be turning 33. Bernard King will be turning 32. And perhaps more importantly, you'll be entering the final years of their contracts, to say nothing of having to re-up some of your other players. Now, the good news is for the Knicks, they don't have a ton of salary committed next season. I do expect... So this is kind of an interesting question for the Knicks. And I think we'll be able to see what effect this year's restricted free agency class had on them. I know this season they didn't really worry about free agency. They elected instead to trust unrestricted free agency. And that's when they lost David Greenwood. Are they scarred by that? And if so, do they feel like they can go out and get another player with a max contract? If they do, I think they let Greg Kelcer go. If they don't, I think they exercise his team option, because if I look statistically year over year, we've seen the cap increase by a rather substantial amount, and I think it would increase by enough that they won't have a full max available, especially after paying their first round pick, but they should have half to two-thirds of a max. And do they think that's enough to go get them another player? I think the answer is it probably is, but then you've got 5-6 players, maybe 7 if you really like Stepanovich. But he's going to have to be paid. And you still have to fill out the rest of your roster. If we've seen anything from the injury report this year, it's that you don't have to have overwhelming depth. I know everybody talks about the Trailblazers are super deep. And again, this is probably me overreacting to my first season when Bernard King was injured to me. But I do think it's necessary for a team to go about 7 deep, because you want to be able to withstand an injury and still not have a black hole on your bench if somebody gets into foul trouble. So in my head, anyway, you want to have your starting 5. You probably want 1 quality backup big and 1 quality backup wing. That's kind of where I think or I guess it could be a combo guard that you have as a backup, but one backup big, one backup little. And I don't know that the Knicks, if they elect to exercise Kelsher's option, can't get that with what they currently have, because they'll have five players under contract. They'll be adding a sixth, and they'll probably have a substantial amount of cap space to get not a frontline starter, but at least a good backup. If they don't bring Kelsher back, though, that creates a hole for them. And while I think you can probably get one good backup for about the MLA, I think it's going to be hard to attract two. And if they let him go, they probably won't have the MLE to play with. They'll just have cap space, and that tends to fill up fast. So it's a crossroads season for the Knicks. And if they stay the course and they hang on to the Supersonics pick, it wouldn't surprise me to see them start shopping Moses Malone and Bernard King for monster rebuild packages to start being able to rebuild around that player. But if I were the Knicks, I would wait one more season before doing that, because, you know, as they're finding out by holding on to the Supersonics pick, it's very dangerous to begin a rebuild when you don't have your own pick. So I think the Knicks are going to be a Moses King team for the rest of this year. I think they will be that next year. I think 1988 is the time we see this team starting to pivot to build around whomever they picked in the draft. That's just my prediction. So I think you've got two solid years from the Knicks. Do they have enough to get to the top of the mountain? I think they have enough to win a playoff series. Moses Malone and Bernard King have both shown they are excellent players. What they haven't shown us is that they can take a team to the mountaintop all by themselves. And, you know, Bernard King did make it as the playoff MVP in 92 when he played with Kansas City, but he was playing kind of on a super team there. And Moses Malone is amazing, but I don't think Malone and King, with really not a lot of help, are enough. And so we will see if that's the case. I can see them winning their first round playoff series. I don't see them making it to the conference finals. Next season, depending on where their pick falls from the Supersonics and how ready that player is to contribute, they could make some noise, but then I think they're going to start packing it up. So for me, the Knicks window is starting to close as they're currently constituted. Just because I think, you know, all of their players now are in their primes, and by the time whomever they get as their potential next star comes online, these guys are going to be, their current core is going to be too old. And right now they're only, you know, winning at about a 58% clip, so they're not super dominant either. If the playoffs were to start today, the Knicks are sitting in the fifth spot in the East, and that means they wouldn't have home court. They may be hard-pressed to win a series. I think they're capable. I never would count out anybody with Malone. But it's just a indication of how fragile things are in this league that the Knicks, you know, again, probably have a two-year window, and that's it. Moving on to the New Jersey Nets. This is another team that that I think is kind of trying to straddle two timelines. They're probably doing it a little bit better. Dale Ellis is 25, Fat Lever is 25, Eddie A. Johnson is 26. So these guys are all coming into their prime. The one piece I'm worried about is Chocolate Thunder, Daryl Dawkins. He's 29, meaning he's starting to enter his decline. And Herb Williams has been solid, but has he been a difference maker in the middle? I don't know. And so when you're competing against Moses Malone, or when you're competing against Nance and Buck Williams, or when you're competing against the size of the Bucks and the Bulls in the East, I think that as long as Daryl Dawkins is still doing more or less what he's done since the league opened, they're going to be fine. What I'm worried about is that I can see signs of slippage this year. If you take a look in the first season of the league, 29 points. Next season, 29.5, 27.6, 28.8, 27.9. This season, he's down to 24.6. His personal fouls are up to 3.3. His rebounding and assists are flat. Field goal percentage used to be 57%, 59%. He's now down to 55%. He's still amazing, but he's slipping. And so the question for me is, how do they replace him? And is it natural growth from Lever and Allison Johnson that kind of makes up for that? I don't know. Lever is due for a payday. I think Lever's been a great success story following his broken leg. But next season, he's probably going to command a max deal, and that would eat up any cap space that the Nets have. The following season, Ellis is going to command a max deal, and then they're really going to be over the cap. So for the Nets, the question is, do they believe that this core has enough juice to take them to the top of the mountain? Looking at the talent individually, I want to say yes, with a caveat, and that is that I would think that with the amount of offensive flash and sizzle that they've got between Kellogg and Johnson and Ellis and Lever and Dawkins and Williams, they should be better than where they are, which is the number 9 offensive team in the league. That worries me, and I almost wonder if the solution, given that Ellis and Eddie A. Johnson and Lever are all proficient three-point shooters, is to try to start crafting the Nets into the first three-point shooting team. And to that end, I would, if I were in RPF's shoes, be looking at seeing whether or not I can flip Herb Williams or Daryl Dawkins for a three-point shooting big man like, say, Bill Laimbeer. Alternatively, they could probably pick up a more, I guess, specialized three-point big in free agency or something. But, Ellis is a great three-point shooter. Johnson is a great three-point shooter. Lever is a good three-point shooter. Lean into that because, as I discussed earlier, a lot of teams have excellent post defenders. What they don't have are a lot of good perimeter defenders. And I think the Nets have the potential to be the first team to really lean into a perimeter-based game. I do think, though, they need to find the right big men to do that. Again, Laimbeer is the first one that comes to mind. There's probably more out there that I'm not thinking of. But the Nets, again, they're kind of middle of the pack. They're 27 and 23. That's 54% win clip. I think they could finish behind the Bullets in the division. They might be able to leapfrog the Knicks. They might not. They're probably a playoff squad. Do they have enough to win a playoff series? If injuries go their way or if Ellis has a hot night shooting, they might be able to, but I wouldn't count on it. And what I don't see is that their bigs are getting better, and I think that's the concern I would have if I were a Nets fan. Next up is the Celtics, and oh boy, did the Celtics make a move. They got rid of Ralph Sampson for Dominique Wilkins. And so now they have a core of Hakeem Olajuwon, Dominique Wilkins, and Terry Porter. Dominique's the oldest of those at 26. He's going to be, up for a big raise this offseason. But I really like what the Celtics have done here, even if they don't own their own draft pick. They are ready to, they can decline the options on Don Collins and Jamal Wilkes and Kyle Macy. So what they can do is they can turn around very quickly. Terry Porter is still on his rookie deal. Hakeem Olajuwon is 1 year into his rookie deal. They've got some depth with Gerald Wilkins and Rich Kelly and Jim Thomas. And so, which is one player that's going to be on a max, and that's Dominique. They can afford to go star hunting. The question I would have for the Celtics is whether or not they believe that they'll be able to get a big star in free agency. And then the other question is, what kind of a star do they need? Terry Porter is ready to be a quality point guard. Dominique, we know, is an incredible scorer on the wing. Hakeem, incredible two-way player in the middle. That still leaves them with two significant holes to fill. Maybe you believe that Gerald Wilkins is the answer. I don't think he is, simply because he's got the scoring chops, but really doesn't shine anywhere else. It's one of the reasons I shied away from him in the draft. You know, his perimeter defense is okay. Yeah, maybe a little above average. His post defense is awful. So he's a guy that you could exploit at the small forward in a matchup. At shooting guard, his handles and passing aren't great. His rebounding is poor for a small forward. So, and he doesn't steal the ball a lot for a shooting guard. So it's just, you know, where does he fit? Maybe Angry Banana has the answer to that. But you know, the Celtics are a team that I think is going to be on the rise. Dominique still has room to grow. Hakeem has room to grow. Terry Porter has room to grow. I talked a lot earlier about, you know, teams in this division that are on two timelines. It's very clear the Celtics are on the future timeline. They are looking to compete in about 2 years, probably. I think this season is the season where they want to add players to the mix and just let their team grow. And then the following season is when they're going to, they'll have their own draft pick back. I don't know if it's going to be great by that time, but if they can make the right moves and acquire the right young pieces around their core, they're going to be ready to get back into it. It's not going to be this year. It may not be next year. I think 1988 is when we really see the Celtics start blossoming. And finally, the Philadelphia 76ers. This is Gary's team. I still love, I would nominate, I don't think he put it in the media thread or meme thread, but I think it would be the media entry of the year, is I'm going to run this league right into the ground video. Gary, that was great. Don't change. So this is a team that is clearly building for the future. They've got Jay Humphries and Chris Mullen as their little man and wingman. What they don't have right now, at least as I see it, is a clear center. I think Sam Perkins gives them a guy that they can develop alongside Mullen and Humphries. And this might be another team, along with the Nets, that's ready to lean into three-point shooting. Mullen is an excellent three-point shooter. Perkins is a good three-point shooter. John Sundvold, who they could run at point guard, is an excellent three-point shooter. So, again, this might be another team that might be looking to see if they can pry Lambeer away from, I think it's the Mavericks, to get 5 three-point shooters on the floor at all times. And that, I think, is their quickest way to success, is to try to get, you know, the three-point shooting up and firing, maybe, you know, 5 years before we really see it start to come into the historical league. And as far as Gary's cap situation, I think he's done a very good job. I think he would probably like to shop Andrew Toney and Jack Sikma. Both of them are older players. Sikma's 30, Toney is 28. Now, Toney is an interesting duck. I think he's a great leader off the bench, simply because he has a wild amount of athleticism, which lets him be kind of a microwave scorer. When he was up for free agency, I did like him. What I didn't like was him at the salary that he's at. I would have preferred to get him at about two-thirds that. The good news, though, is that Gary has a bunch of guys that are on rookie deals, so he can afford to overpay Toney a little bit, but Sikma is the guy that I would really if I were in Gary's shoes, concentrate on trying to move. The other thing for Gary to kind of be mindful of is Sundvold will need to be paid after next season, but he probably has this offseason and the following offseason to make moves to start filling up his cap with depth or with a star or with something else. Even with Sigma probably being overpaid for his contributions and age, Gary's got a lot of flexibility. What he's got to watch out for is the 1988 offseason, when Perkins needs to be extended, when Humphreys needs to be extended, John Sundvold will have been extended, and then Mullen will be due a contract after that. So Gary has two seasons to really make some moves. If I were in Gary's shoes, I would be trying to sell off my older pieces, and that's Sigma and that's Tony, to pick up draft picks. Even late first round picks can give him depth. They may not be quite as good as Sigma is and as Tony is, but they will be much, much cheaper. And you know, if you can go from paying $2 million a year for, let's see, between Sigma and Tony, you're looking at 30 points a game, to, say, three rookie contracts, which are going to run you maybe $500,000. So you're paying a quarter of the amount, and you can get 10, 15 points a game. Maybe, let's say 15 points a game instead of 30. You're paying a quarter of the salary for half the productivity. That's probably a trade you want to make. So the Philadelphia 76ers are a team who is building for the future. They have some clear win now assets that I think they should be able to flip to other teams. The one thing that I think they will find difficult when they're trying to flip is just contract matching. Sigma makes a lot of money. Tony makes a lot of money. And as teams get over the cap, you start having to match salaries. So it may even be worth, if I were Gary, I would not attach draft picks to these guys. But it might be worth attaching points, or it might be worth attaching a lesser bench player. Let's say even a guy on a rookie scale deal. And you know, here as I'm looking at his squad, I'm thinking, you know, they're not on rookie scale deals per se, but maybe like a Bob Hansen. He's got some potential, but he's not going to reach that potential before you have to pay him. And Gary doesn't want to be paying Bob Hansen. He wants to be paying Chris Mullen and Jay Humphreys. So that's, I think, something that Gary can look for, is, you know, maybe do a package deal. It doesn't have to be before the trade deadline. It could be in the off season. That seems to be when Gary does his best work anyway, is in the offseason. So I would think if he's able to do that, he's got a real opportunity to make some moves, clear out the books a little bit, and build some depth. And if he does that, the other thing that Gary might want to consider doing is trying to accumulate points. I know you can't train purple players, so Mullen and Humphreys, he's not going to be able to improve them quicker, but getting Perkins up to his potentials faster, getting Sundvold up to his potentials faster, that's certainly something you might want to look at. And the other thing you could do if you're Gary is you could consider, if you don't think those guys fit with your plan, maybe you don't want to run a three-point heavy offense because you don't think the game is going to let you launch enough threes. I think Sundvold and Perkins are both players, because of their skill sets and because of their youth and because of their contracts, that you could probably flip for future draft picks or for other young players that fit what you're doing a little bit better. So Gary, if you do wind up listening to this, my suggestion would be, if you don't want to build around the three, consider flipping Perkins and Sundvold, not for established players, but you might attach them to a Tony or a Sigma to get a young player that fits your build better, or to get some draft capital so that you can draft a guy that fits your build better. And unfortunately, at this point, I don't know what exactly the plan is or should be or maybe wants to be for Gary. I guess one thing now that I look at it, one other piece of advice that I would give to Gary is watch your personal foul ratings. I know that's not a popular rating, and I know it's not a flashy rating, but when I take a look at why isn't Jay Humphries producing as I would expect him to produce, I think part of it may be the personal fouls. He's averaging 4.2 fouls a game. Sikma is averaging 4.3. Sunvold, 3.2. Pat Cummings, who's one of his starters, averaging 3.5. When your starters can't stay on the floor, they can't give you the production. And I believe foul ratings are something you can train on a purple potential player. I'd have to go back and look. I'm doing this off the cuff. But I would think that maybe investing some foul training into Jay Humphries is not an awful idea. And so if that is the way that you feel you want to go, maybe prioritize getting points over young, cheap players or points over production just so you can make sure that Humphries is going to stay on the floor for longer. So the other, I guess, a bit of unsolicited advice I might give is when I look at the 76ers, the one thing that kind of jumps out to me is Humphries is a good perimeter defender. Richardson and Sunvold are slightly above average. Sam Perkins is okay at post defense. Sikma's okay at post defense. Everybody else is a horrible defender. And that shows up in, you know, opponents' scoring margin. The 76ers are dead last. Opponents' rebounding, if you look at their margins, they're dead last in the league. Turnovers, they don't force them, and they're dead last in the league in differential blocks. They're dead last in the league in differential. So, you know, blocks, steals, rebounds, opponents' field goal percentage, again, they're worst in the league. All of these things are defensive ratings. So, Gary, when you're going to build your team, the next guy or two that you're adding probably wants to be a high-quality defender. Maybe try to take a page from the Bucks and look for a center with a very high block shot rating, because that will affect, you know, if he has a high post defense rating, it affects the guy he's playing against. A high block shot rating means he can affect other players as well because he's blocking their shots. Alternatively, if you don't have a good big guy with shot blocking available, you want to look for a top flight perimeter defender with a high steals rating, because that will help get you, it gives your opponents more empty possessions, ones that end in steals, and it gives you more chances to score yourself because now you have the ball. I know Darth and I were talking about this when we did our joint pod, and I don't know if this is the case based on the way the sim engine works, but at least in real basketball, I tend to think a steal is generally better than a dead ball turnover, simply because usually when you get a steal, you're getting a run out, you're getting a fast break, you're getting a higher percentage shot. So that's where I would try to go if I were the 76ers. I would try to get in some guys that are good at playing defense and that are not just good individual defenders with the post and perimeter defense ratings, but are good team defenders, which I think comes in the steal and block ratings. The other thing, and I know this is a large laundry list, I think Chris Mullin can eventually grow into your offensive focus. And as I mentioned right now, I think Andrew Toney is an excellent microwave scorer off the bench. But he's 28. He's not going to be around forever. His contract is big. You need to find your next bench leader to succeed Andrew Toney. It doesn't have to be this offseason, but it should probably be within the next two off seasons. That would be my shopping list if I were Digiskunk. So that's it for now. This one's going to be a little bit shorter than I usually run. Again, I'm kind of getting back into the swing of things here. My hope is to crank through the rest of the divisions. Probably will not get to them before the trade deadline, but maybe right after the trade deadline. So there you have it. It's good to be back, and we'll see everybody around. And again, hopefully we can get some more joint podcasts going as I get back into the swing of things. This is your host for Chat with a Cat, and we'll catch you on the next one.